Hi, welcome back. Another week, another whirlwind.
Another war.
Another war. Every week, another war. I cut my hair myself today. That's where we're at now.
I did not cut my hair, but yours looked good.
I did it myself just now. That's where we're at. Haven't been to the gym or the yoga studio in like 6 days.
I've been going to the gym, luckily.
I am not. The spaces have been my gym, I guess, but we're going to eat.
I'm up at home following the news.
Yeah, I've got to do that. I got to be here for the people. I live in the phone. Why do you shut down people on television when they, I don't know, I'm not in charge of the Telegram. If I were, we probably a lot more lenient, a lot more out of control. But we're going to both go over what we went over last week. Marat and I both get to simultaneously eat crow and celebrate. So we'll let Marat, we'll do Marat first. Marat can win first and I'll eat crow. So what did you say last week, Marat, that Trump, what was it that Trump wanted the Nobel Peace Prize?
Kind of every week, but yeah, all of his actions felt like the Nobel Peace Prize is like a real goal for him, right? And you were a little bit skeptical if that was a real motivation for him, but it's always felt like all of his actions have felt like that was a primary aim of his. And we did see that Pakistan nominated him just the other day. And I know I'm sure he's happy about that. So it's not quite a celebration for me. We don't know exactly how bad he wanted it, but
he didn't really seem happy. He seemed pretty mad. I'm very happy to report that I have arranged. Oh my God, this dog! You can read it, Marat.
I'm very happy to report that I have arranged, along with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, a wonderful treaty between the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Republic of Rwanda. In their war, which was known for violent bloodshed and death, more so even than most other wars is capitalized, and has gone on for decades. Representatives from Rwanda and the Congo will be in Washington on Monday to sign documents capitalized. This is a great day for Africa and quite frankly, a great day for the world. I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize for this. I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize for stopping the war between India and Pakistan. I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize for stopping the war between Serbia and Kosovo. I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize for keeping peace between Egypt and Ethiopia. A massive Ethiopian-built dam, stupidly financed by the United States of America, substantially reduces the water flowing into the Nile River. And I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize for doing the Abraham Accords in the Middle East, which, if all goes well, will be loaded to the brim with additional countries signing on and will unify the Middle East for the first time in the ages, in quotes. No, I won't get a Nobel Peace Prize no matter what I do, including Russia, Ukraine, and Israel, Iran, whatever those outcomes may be. But the people know, and that's all that matters to me. So it's one of those where he's acting like he doesn't really care about it or that he won't get it, but clearly he cares very much about it.
I can't get over like how much it really does matter to him. Pakistan, I think, nominated him either that day or the day before.
So kind of shrewd move by Pakistan because they're going to want to get on his good side a little bit, and that's certainly one way to do it.
Of the month, Neil, like not of the month, of the year, of the half decade. I don't know, maybe from half decade from 2025 until 2030. But that was me. I said it didn't matter, but I might have a redemption arc, as I did predict a little bit. I think, and here, I'll go out on a limb, that this week the United States joins and serious discussions, if not the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, happens.
Yours was more impressive, yeah, because the following day we had Trump make an announcement, and then a few days after that, we have, of course, the U.S. Sending in the B-2 bombers. So yeah, I mean, basically it was like a two-parter where there was something the following day and there was something within, by the end of the week. So kudos, very impressive prediction.
I'm excited about that. There are a lot of stuff happened this week, and I know that the focus is obviously on the last 24 hours. And so much stuff has happened that we're going to go through a few of the things that maybe people didn't pay as much attention to. But first, I want to thank Iran, Margbar, Ukraine, or however they say. Thank you very much, Iran. They struck a Ukrainian cafe in Israel. And I think that that is a good segue into our next section, which is Putin speaking at length and doing a short Q&A. Well, it turned into a long Q&A. They had to end it. But a short Q&A in front of the Prince of Bahrain, which I thought was also important because he was seated next to the Prince of Bahrain. So let's take a look and we'll discuss some of these clips. They are in order, which I think is important. So while we're showing these clips, it's important to see how the speech or the answers are kind of progressing.
Продвигают такие нарративы, как ненадежность России как союзника, провокаторы. Они провоцируют ситуацию. Но это им не поможет, они не добьются своих целей. Потому что, во-первых, каждый конфликт, он только внешне похож на другие конфликты. Но, как совершенно точно сказал в недавнем прошлом министр обороны и теоретик в известной степени вооруженных конфликтов, вооруженного противостояния, мой уважаемый коллега из Индонезии, а сегодня он президент этой страны. Мы, кстати, издали его книжку на русском языке о военном искусстве. Вот. Каждая страна несет собственную ответственность за то, что происходит у нее.
Maybe he heard everybody online. Everybody online was kind of a roar about, where's Russia? Where's Russia in all of this? And do you think that he kind of is responding to that, or is he responding to people's kind of questions about, I thought they signed a strategic partnership, blah, blah, blah. What do you think is kind of, it's kind of interesting because they usually don't address criticisms that way.
Yeah, that was a fairly like a personal responsibility sort of answer where he was just like, yeah, we take every country is responsible for what happens in their own borders. He also looks fairly relaxed, I notice. Like his nowadays when I see his clips, he does that kind of semi-joking, you know, interjections and stuff. And so he, yeah, I mean, it's certainly different rhetoric from us, from like a interventionist, you know, we got to be everywhere at all times sort of approach. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like that was a very measured way to sort of give a non-answer there.
Yeah, and Neil says, not constantly bellowing intent with a childish level of hectoring and doesn't mean it isn't there. And I think that's important. And it's important to stress that that's why I said it. Putin doesn't normally address these sorts of criticisms. So it's important to understand that he did. It's not like Trump, who can't stop posting about everyone who says a mean word about him. He's fighting with Thomas Massie online today. Putin's just not that way. Even when other leaders criticize him, he doesn't take the time to respond. So I thought it was pretty poignant, but it goes further.
Значит, во-первых, в этой связи мы всегда выполняем все наши обязательства. То же самое происходит на российско-иранском треке. Мы поддерживаем Иран в его борьбе за его законные интересы, в том числе за борьбе за его интересы по мирному атому. И мы всегда занимали эту позицию. Принципиальная наша позиция в данном случае и в этом конфликте не поменялась. Кто говорит, что мы должны были бы сделать больше, что больше? Начинать какие-то боевые операции? Так что ли? У нас и так идут боевые операции с теми, которых мы считаем противниками тех идей, которые мы защищаем, и тех, кто создает угрозы для Российской Федерации. А это в основе своей, в принципе, одни и те же силы.
Interesting. So that's the first message of the same forces, but it's at the tail end of the conversation of putting or supporting Iran in their development of nuclear energy, non-nuclear or non-whatever he was saying, and kind of once again address the, what did you want us to do?
Right. Yeah. So I heard, you know, moral support being given. So, you know, kind of in just like a superficial sense, you know, kind of given support there. But yeah, he doubles down on this, you know, focusing on what's going on with the Russian Federation and kind of mentioning that they're tied up. Right. But yeah, the big thing there is that the mention of the same forces. And so, in a way, this does sort of, you know, hearken to an understanding of an axis, but he is careful with his words there to, you know, to not put any sort of military responsibility on himself.
Correct. And but he even goes to further stress that. So we'll watch this.
Значит, во-первых, в этой связи мы всегда выполняем все наши обязательства. То же самое происходит на российско-иранском треке. Мы поддерживаем Иран в его борьбе за его законные интересы, в том числе в борьбе за его интересы по мирному атому. И мы всегда занимали эту позицию. Принципиальная наша позиция в данном случае и в этом конфликте не поменялось. Кто говорит, что мы должны были бы сделать больше, что больше?
I guess that was the wrong video. But, so he does go on and further explicate the same forces. And then he goes on to say this.
Беспокоит. Говорю без всякой иронии, без шуток. Конечно, очень много конфликтного потенциала, он растет. Ну и у нас под носом, нас это касается напрямую. Конфликт, который мы переживаем на Украине, на этом направлении. То, что происходит на Ближнем Востоке. И, конечно, нас очень беспокоит то, что происходит вокруг ядерных объектов Ирана. Беспокоит то, к чему это может привести, и это требует, безусловно, нашего не только внимательного отношения к происходящим событиям, но и к поиску развязок, к поиску решений, причем желательно мирными средствами, по всем направлениям. Вот я говорю совершенно искренне.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he, certainly, I mean, the world's on the brink right now. I mean, I don't, that was a fairly self-explanatory statement, but I mean, yeah, I'm sure Russia, just like the U.S., is concerned about all of this extending out to a larger global conflict.
What do you think about the theory that I've been laying forward that this is this conflict in Iran is a way to somehow gain leverage or the attention of Russia and China?
Well, that's always in play. No, I think that's a strong theory, because you always try to pick off, you know, I always talk about this sense of equilibrium, right? And so, like, when, you know, there's two sides and you pick off a big piece, you know, the other side tries to balance that out, or, you know, or they're just losing. And so, yeah, I think that's always been in play. And I think Iran is certainly, you know, an easier chip to go for than, say, something like a Russia. There's often talk about, we can try to woo Russia away from China, right? And so this would be something similar, but I definitely think Iran is certainly far easier in play. And it's, when we talk about regime change and stuff like that, that there is a sort of playbook that the U.S. is following, and that does have the potential to actually materialize. But yeah, I mean, I don't even think that's a crazy theory. It seems rational to me.
I agree. I don't know what area is messaging me. Anyway, so that was obviously before the bombings of the nuclear power plant. Also before the bombings, we had Maersk, who decided to, that's the largest shipping company in the world, decided to stop shipping to northern Israel. And so that's kind of important. The northern part of Israel is completely shut down in terms of global shipping. So That's also happening. We also had earlier this week, prior to the strikes,
Israel's government has also spread chaos, terror, and suffering throughout the region. Iran's government has also spread chaos, terror, and suffering throughout the region. Let us not forget that the Iranian government was an enabling and ideological material force behind Hamas's deadly assault on Israel.
Large Freudian slip from the interim UN, which was interesting. I kind of enjoyed that, but I thought that it wasn't so much a meme as it was kind of telling, because she just kept going. She didn't even really miss a beat. Prior to, or immediately following the attack, Trump obviously releases a statement.
I want to thank and congratulate Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. We worked as a team like perhaps no team has ever worked before. And we've gone a long way to erasing this horrible threat to Israel. I want to thank the Israeli military for the wonderful job they've done. And most importantly, I want to congratulate the great American patriots who flew those magnificent machines tonight, and all of the United States military on an operation the likes of which the world has not seen in many, many decades.
It's just constant superlatives. His favorites are that has not been seen before, and magnificent. Like it's always just the biggest and greatest. It gets repetitive, you know?
I know. I'm like almost bored with even covering this stuff. I'm bored with Trump.
I also hate when he calls him BB in like a formal setting. It just drives me crazy.
Why? They've known each other for years. They're so close.
It's a grown man. Like, why do you call him BB? Anyway.
He says it wrong too. He says BB. It's not BB. It's Bibby. 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 Anyway. So Pakistan, as we know, offered the Nobel Peace Prize, the grand coveted Nobel Peace Prize. And now they're confused because they have to condemn the strikes. So we don't really know what's going on over there. But we wish Pakistanis the best. I guess they thought if they nominated Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize, they wouldn't bomb. He'd be like, I better not bomb. I'm going to get this.
When they condemned him the next day, it wouldn't be as bad.
What are we doing here? They really just the funniest thing ever. So we know that they strike the three nuclear facilities, Natanz, Bushehr. What was the other one? And then Fordo. Today, Isfahan, correct. Sorry. Today they're saying Natanz is likely either very badly damaged or just completely destroyed due to the type of munition and the way that Natanz is structured. But we had six strikes on Fordo, and I don't know if you guys can see this, but here's another view of that. So we had six strikes in total, three at the entrance, three at the exit, which have not incapacitated Fordo by any means. But they've kind of just made them they have to clear the entrance and exit out and obviously test for structural impairment. But other than that, that's why I felt like, I think I said it on my Twitter, I said something like these were just a soft launch into a war. Like these weren't really that. Everybody's saying, oh, the plants were evacuated already. Everything of importance was moved out of them. The uranium is gone. The heavy equipment is gone. So really, like, and I would think that with they tell us that Mossad is the greatest. I would think that they Americans would know that. And so, do you think that this was just an easy way to get kind of involved and then to, because this puts Iran in a bad position?
Yeah, I think this is a great, from perspective of Trump, this is a great Trump move because you get to have some show of power. You get to have some, boom, you get to kind of point to some, a military operation that, they went in, they came out. We got it done, but ultimately the mission wasn't accomplished. Like if it was just the entry and the exit that was blown up, but Trump's not going to get into the details of all that. He's going to come out there. He's going to, shout out Bibi. He's going to shout out the magnificent machines and kind of take that W as he likes it. So it's all very kind of a veneer superficial way as Trump likes it. But yeah, in terms of the bottom line for Iran, they are in a bad position, you're right. But they're not like, this wasn't like a knockout punch, right?
No, so, not at all. Not at all.
Still remains to be seen, but I agree. Iran, this is tough for Iran. They're not in a strong position.
And of course, we have our usual suspects are running around manufacturing consent. Their airstrikes are not a war, which I'm not trying to like be memes or like sarcastic, but I think this should spark a conversation of some sort of like incrementalism. What gives us the right? Firstly, what gives us the right to go in? And like the war is happening as we're striking them. But then once we stop striking them, that's the end. We're no longer at war. Or have we been incrementally ratcheted up so far? Or like because of, I mean, mostly Libya and Syria. If we don't have boots on the ground and Americans aren't dying, that's not technically at war. Like, I mean, this is crazy to me.
The thing that drives me nuts is this like this hyperfixation on semantics and the way that we lead into it and the way we discuss things in the modern day. And I'll give you an example. Like one little way that people do this is like they'll argue over here's an example. They'll be like, well, so-and-so is not anti-Semitic because Semites, you know, includes Arabs as well. So it's like they'll try to weasel out of like one particular thing by redefining the word as opposed to the actual notion, right?
Yeah.
Get into this when we talk about, oh, is this an occupation or is this a genocide or ethnic cleansing? And so we're going to get into that more where it's like, is this a war or was this airstrikes or was this an invasion? Or is a war only when we send boots on the ground? Or is a war only when it's on our homeland as opposed to sending troops out there? So I know that like this little semantic game is going to be part of the strategy. I can already sense it. But yeah, we've spent so much time in the post-Cold War, especially post-Iraq, being skeptical of war and skeptical of interventionism. And so following along that, we will probably seek to redefine war or what that actually means when we say no new wars and still continue getting into new wars.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, we did this with Libya. Obama did, I don't remember his exact phrasing, but it was exactly that. And then it was like, this isn't a war. We're working within the confines of NATO. Exactly, Matt. It's very new speak. It's very fascistic. That's a fascistic trait to use new speak. It's very like off-putting and kind of, I mean, we've talked about this before, even before you were on the show with John, we used to talk about the usurping of the normal and how they kind of like just switch the words to mean what they like. Even now, like people will be like Jew, 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 Jew. And I'm like, even from a not, this is anti-Semitism standpoint, I'm like, Jew's not the word you're looking for. I think that's just like the catch-all term. Or like Aryan, people are saying, oh, Aryan just means white now. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. And it's like, I can't live like this.
Well, it's like the word lame, right? Like lame, like the archaic definition of it is like disabled, right? Like someone with like a lame leg. But like the way we use lame is different now because language is dynamic, words evolve. But sometimes people will think it's this brilliant argument to be like, well, actually, this is the definition of the word. And so this doesn't apply to me. It's like, well, yes, it does.
I got into an argument in a group chat with like, I think she was a little bit younger in her 20s. So she was saying like, we're Aryan and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm not Aryan. And I was like, she's like, yeah, and they're not Aryan. And I was like, do you know that like Indians and Iranians are Aryan? And they're like, no, Aryan means white. And I was like, no, 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 it means this. And they're like, no, now it means white. And I was like, oh, they're on like a whole, they're speaking a completely different language than I am.
And see, they're so fixated on the words, they think that they're actually explaining something in real world terms just by simply defining the word or sticking to one particular definition of the word.
That's, yeah, exactly. We've got off on a tangent, but it's a good tangent to sort of be off on because we're getting a lot of this sort of double speak, this sort of news. I mean, well, let's look at J.D. Vance did a lot of mental gymnastics. Let's see.
What we've said to the Iranians is we do not want war with Iran. We actually want peace. But we want peace in the context of them not having a nuclear weapons program. And that's exactly what the president accomplished last night. I really think there are two big questions for the Iranians here. Are they going to attack American troops, or are they going to continue with their nuclear weapons program? And if they leave American troops out of it and they decide to give up their nuclear weapons program once and for all, then I think the president has been very clear. We can have a good relationship with the Iranians. We can have a peaceful situation in that region of the world. We have to step back a little bit, Kristen, and remind ourselves that we negotiated aggressively with the Iranians to try to find a peaceful settlement to this conflict. It was only when the president decided that the Iranians were not negotiating in good faith that he took this action. Yeah. He didn't take it lightly, but I actually think it provides an opportunity to reset this relationship, reset these negotiations, and get us in a place where Iran can decide not to be a threat to its neighbors, not to be a threat to the United States. And if they're willing to do that, the United States is all ears.
I mean, it's the whole plan is just to, hamstring Iran. I mean, it's not fair because we don't even know what the nuclear program that they've been working on is. We don't know if they have it, or at least we should say we don't know for sure. You know, people speculate, but the point is though that we've always used this boogeyman of them working on it to explain why we need to go in, and so there's this constant, you know, looming boogeyman of the need for intervention, and once again, we don't even know if it's real or not. Also, once again, the mascara that he wears is just weird. His eyes look freaky.
He's getting sun and stuff, so it looks even more like he meant to do it, and it's just like,
how has no one pointed that out to him yet?
No one tells him, like. But then again, I mean, his boy, Alex Karp, it's like his thing is like, I haven't brushed my hair in some odd years. So this is like, they don't care what they look like. The thing is that it's also the idea. Well, I don't think it is for Vance, but for Karp, it's definitely like, I'm better than you. I'll look however the hell I want. You don't get to say what's norm and what's not. I'm the norm. I hold the norm, sort of thing. But I don't think that's the case with JD. I think he's just weird.
I wanted to make one more point on nuclear proliferation. I like to draw this like metaphor for because clearly the world is moving towards more countries.
I have no idea what that was or what.
So the world is moving towards, you know, more countries seeking the bomb, right? And that makes sense why they would. And Iran is, you know, like a, you know, it's no slouch. It's a power. It's a strong power, and so they, you know, they're kind of next up to have the bomb. But if you were to compare the world community to, say, like just a neighborhood of people, right? Let's say it's a neighborhood of 50 people, and they we can liken the bomb to the equivalent of firearms. And so if you just had, you know, a community of people, and there were a couple of them that had firearms, you could think of them as sort of like the policemen, right? And so initially the community would agree, okay, we have just a couple of firearms and that's good. It's best that we just have a few people that have them and they're able to kind of protect the community. And if more and more firearms come in, there'll come a tipping point where, you know, initially it'll just be a couple people out of 50, and then it'll be 10 out of 50, and it'll be 15. Then at some point, everyone's looking around like, oh, half of us have guns. I better be somebody who has a gun. So then it really accelerates because everyone's looking around like, I don't want to be the one stuck without a gun. So there is that tipping point where it quickly shifts from, it's okay, we're fine with a few people having it, to we all need it. And we're fast approaching to that point. And it's going to be, it's interesting to me as how we like overcome that tipping point as to when, you know, countries like Iran, you know, these middle powers that eventually do get the bomb and are able to do it without the larger power stepping in.
Exactly. This is also a really great clip of JD Vance. I think I don't know if it's today or it's recent.
And the second thing is, Kristen, I certainly empathize with Americans who are exhausted after 25 years of foreign entanglements in the Middle East. I understand the concern, but the difference is that back then we had dumb presidents, and now we have a president who actually knows how to accomplish America's national security objectives. So this is not going to be some long drawn out thing. We've got in. We've done the job of setting their nuclear program back. We're going to now work to permanently dismantle that nuclear program over the coming years. And that is what the president has set out to do. Simple.
We had dumb presidents before.
Back then we had dumb presidents.
And again, like this is that that salesman way that they just present everything, where back before, you know, they were failing and blah, blah, we came in, we came out, you know, everything is sold as a win. Everything is delivered with a bow. I don't know. It's a snooze fest for me when I watch those, you know, talking head clips from them. It's always kind of delivered the same.
Well, what do you think about, because yesterday we had the rumor that JD, I guess it is just that rumor, that JD was sort of pushing back. And I was like, this is to flood the zone when it came out, kind of just to be like.
Yeah, I think Basil had a great point on this, that he's hedging his bets immediately as it's happening. He gets to, you know, toss out this, you know, little thing like, oh, well, I wasn't on board. You know, I wasn't all the way on board. I kind of, you know, pushed back. So he gets to be the anti-war candidate next time.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, there will be next time. He's definitely running in 2028. Speaking of running in 2028, here's the other one.
Well, if they retaliate, it'll be the worst mistake they've ever made. Look, we can fly in and out of Iran at will. We went in last night. The president sent our military forces from halfway across the world, went in, conducted this operation, left. Not a shot was fired against us. They didn't even know what had happened. By the time we left, the planes were out of their airspace before they finally started realizing they'd been hit. So it would be a terrible mistake if Iran retaliates. So, but that's not our goal. This, we are not declaring war on Iran. We're not looking for war on Iran. But if they attack us, then I think we have capabilities they haven't even seen yet. It would be a terrible mistake on their part. And frankly, it's not what we hope for or wish.
It's just getting like exhausting, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you would think if you were listening to them, you would think that all this time, Americans' concern regarding war is strictly the idea of war coming to us, right? And I mean, that is, of course, you know, generally the broad concern, but people also do care about us not attacking others or blowing up other places. Yeah, this really like flippant way that they've been delivering this, like, I don't see what the big deal is. We just went and bombed them. It's not like they're going to be bombing us. It's insulting.
What do you think about the name of it? Operation Midnight Hammer. Oh, and this is another thing. They thought they were so slick. They're like, you guys were watching these B-2s that left and flew west when really we flew east. And it's like, what's the difference? Why did you fly so many B-2s? You could have just flew one set. It would have made no difference.
I do like Midnight Hammer.
Midnight Hammer. It's
actually a pretty decent name. But yeah, everything that this administration does is so comical. I mean, even coming down to like the stealth bombers, but Midnight Hammer will be a memorable one.
I love Midnight. Like, I bet Pete Hegseth named that. It's very like 80s hair metal band. Like, it's just so great.
It's like, I want a tool that's, you know, something like something hard to really deliver that. And then we're going to pair it with, you know, something dark, like the midnight.
It's also got like a sort of sexual into it, like so like cheesy and like Aquanet, like I just, oh my god, I love it. Okay, so, and New York Times also says that Fordo was not destroyed but severely damaged and taking it off the table, but 12 bunker busting bombs could not destroy the site. Do you think that we're sort of chasing our tails here? What are we doing here? I don't know that Fordo, we have a graphic of it if you can kind of see it, but Fordo is under a ridgeline in a very high mountain. The most important parts of it are under the ridgeline. So It's actually pretty impressive how they built this thing. If you guys go take a look at it.
I noticed in that clipping there, they misspelled Fordo. They forgot the W, but
I think you could spell it either way, but I'm just used to
that. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I feel like, there is a world where let me just speculate. If let's say there is a deal done, the deal that they didn't get last month, and now they get it because there's more leverage for the U.S. Following this. So if that happens, then Trump really can come out here and say, deliver this as a win. I did get the deal done. We had to do a little bit of strongman tactics, but we come back with far more leverage, than we had a couple of weeks ago, and are able to get a deal done. Now, if no deal is done, and this was just us antagonizing Iran for no reason. Ultimately, we were just chasing our tails a little bit. And this was Trump, just kind of giving this milquetoast attempt to kind of bully them and jump it back. So it remains to be seen what comes of this. My predictions on the Iran thing were poor, so I was way off there. But if we do get a deal done, I will have to give Trump a little credit. But do you think the chances of it are low?
Very.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think that we listened to it a little bit in the space, but I know that like UN stuff doesn't matter. So this isn't really like hanging, but listening to the words at the UN from Nebenzia, I thought that they were pretty poignant. I thought that they were important. They were harsher than past times when they were talking about Palestine, or even when they were talking about themselves. So I don't know. I think that maybe even for Russia, like the nuclear thing is just too far. It's just too far. But I'm not sure. Let's see. This is Rubio talking about, and then we'll discuss what Iran's options are.
Secretary, final question here. Do you expect Iran to move to close the Strait of Hormuz to try to disrupt oil transportation across the world?
Well, I encourage the Chinese government in Beijing to call them about that, because they heavily depend on the Straits of Hormuz for their oil. If they do that, it'll be another terrible mistake. It's economic suicide for them if they do it. And we retain options to deal with that. But other countries should be looking at that as well. It would hurt other countries' economies a lot worse than ours. It would be, a massive escalation that would merit a response, not just by us, but from others.
So they don't think that they should close the Strait of Hormuz. I think that this leaves Iran with three options, where our options are to close the Strait, to retaliate against Israel, or to strike American bases in the region. And I think that they should forego striking the bases in the region.
Okay.
I don't think that they should right now.
I thought number one and number three were going to be the ones they'd go for. I think closing the strait it appears likely. And of course, closing seaborne traffic is going to have global repercussions. I think we're being a little bit he's being a little bit cocky there, where he's saying, well, if they do this, it's going to hurt their economy, but this will hurt our economy as well, especially if we get into something like boots on the ground and higher gas prices and higher interest rates and the traffic being disrupted. All those things kind of compound into we were all going to be sharing this pain, right? Like it's going to affect the globe, and due to the global economy being so integrated now, all of these conflicts sort of impact all of us. And So his message there is a little rose tinted glasses, because it's going to affect all of us.
I think that I support the closing of the strait the most. People are asking me why not hit the military bases. I mean, it's not about like a fatality aversion from me. I mean, people are going to die. It's not from like a patriotic sense. I think from a strategic sense, I don't think that they need to do that just yet. I think that that's something that they could leave on the table for later. I think that closing the Strait of Hormuz really sends the message that this is all of our war. Like, you're all going to get hurt because that's what's happening here. I think that that's a good message to send, or a partial closure, which sends a bad message, or sends a message to China, sort of like we're in this together. And also, I think they should just, I don't think they should end with everything they got, but I think they should up on the escalation ladder against Israel, because I think that they're not really getting. That's like, I feel like if they up on the escalation ladder with Israel and then the retaliation comes from the United States, that's a good kind of a thing to take the temperature of this, I think, because then it sort of puts United States back on the back foot. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to attack the crap out of Israel then. I'm not even going to retaliate against you, whatever. Like, I'm going to close the strait. I'm going to attack the crap out of Israel. And then if the United States reacts to that, or maybe they just attack the crap out of Israel before closing the strait and see how the United States reacts. You know, I'm trying to get the United States to just admit that this isn't about enrichment.
Yeah, another thing I was thinking of yesterday was, I was wondering that, you know, if this ends up being successful, a bad effect of that is countries looking at what Israel did here and think maybe a preemptive first strike is a good plan, because in the way that Israel hit them, and you know, if it ends up working out, other countries will think this is a strategy. It could work. Typically, I mean, like a first strike it's a bit of a risky strategy, and it's looked down upon, right? You know, we typically just only honor, war as something you do to defend yourself and not, you know, to attack others. But I don't like the idea of countries seeing that and thinking maybe we could pull off the same and just kind of strike our enemies first and weaken them before they get strong.
Yeah, I'm wondering where we go from here. Let's see what John Bolton thinks.
Well, let me say this unequivocally. I think President Trump made the right decision for America to attack Iran's nuclear weapons program. And I think we're on the verge of potentially seeing regime change in Iran as part of that. I think this is a huge change in the Middle East. It was a decisive action. It was the right thing to do. I thought somebody should do it for a long time, but better late than never.
There he is. We of course had to roll him out for the Lifetime Achievement Award. As soon as we start attacking Iran, it is the OG neocon himself, John Bolton. Yesterday I saw a million comments of, I wonder where John Bolton is now. You know, John Bolton is somewhere cackling and rolling a blunt and rubbing his hands together slowly. It's. We definitely needed to see him, in all this.
Somebody said that I am inept because I called Iran a paper tiger. I never called them a paper tiger, but I don't think that I'm inept. I don't think that Iran has done anything that severe to Israel yet.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like, I don't know what this kanging is about. I said, then don't watch us anymore. And he said, with pleasure, don't leave your day job. But the joke's on you. I don't have a day job to leave. Maybe you're talking to Murat. He actually has a job. Hanging about Iran's just smoking them. No, they're holding their own. They're hanging in there. I wouldn't say that. I mean, they just took six bunker busters to a nuclear site. Like, they're not. They don't have any deterrence. That's for sure.
A lot of hanging and a lot of like white knighting on behalf of like other countries. It just gets frustrating.
And the building up of Iran, and I'm not saying that, I'm saying the building up of Iran is one of the reasons why we're in this mess. The fact that people are constantly making Iran into this psychotic, arm to the teeth, this Shia, this Muslim Islamist theocracy. And then, people come and then you have the Kangers who are like, Iran's going to blow Israel off the map. And you're like, don't say that.
Exactly. And then the discussion of the worldwide network and stuff like it. Yeah, it's it all Kangs and, you know, adds together for it. And the other thing we're seeing, which is probably frustrating for you too, is the moral fagging world tour, where they bring out those like experts and they give testimonies of like what's being done, you know, to people over there. And essentially it's like, it's a testimony to call to war, right? It's basically saying these awful things are happening. We need to go to war now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting though, that I haven't seen a ton of the moral fagging, which I figured we would start seeing the women, life, freedom people, but I haven't seen a lot of that. Have you?
The thing is, I don't know if the actual testimonies are happening right now, but the clips themselves, whether they were done before, they're being disseminated out.
Well, I mean, the thing right now, and I've seen a few of these diasporoids, they're always so beautiful too. Iranians are like the most beautiful people, but she was talking and I don't even know her name, but she was saying, you know, we're Iranians, we're different. And it was very like elitist, like we're not like those Arabs. And I'm like, all of our like ethnic brethren went through color revolutions that fell into chaos. If you're from Eastern Europe or even just Operation Gladio country. So it's very interesting to see this diasporoid be like, it won't be like that for us. Like you're all just savages.
You know, Arthur de Gobineau, the French writer who was the one who came up with some of the like the Indo-European racial science, one of his jobs was he was the ambassador to Iran, because he was like a little bit of like an ancient history nerd. And anyway, this is like a super racist guy, right? But and he kind of looked down on the Iranians, but he had believed that Iranian women were the most beautiful, and that like the beauty of the Iranian women was like a form of soft power for Iranians. I really found that interesting. But yeah, I mean, we're Iranians. We're not like that like cultural, self-perception and, you know, in a sense, kanging, that really is important to Iranians, because they're, you know, it's an old nation. It's an old power. And the, over time, Arabic and, Arabic Islamic culture became associated with the Middle East, but much of the Middle East is also from Persian culture. And so there is this sort of a chip on your shoulder to always remind people that. And so sometimes that ends up manifesting in conversations that aren't entirely like where it's not super relevant, but it'll still come out. But in something like this, you know, so as you mentioned, that woman was like, we're Iranian. And so it always rears its head, for better or for worse. But yeah, it's a very proud culture. They do see themselves, you know, as, you know, a longtime power, but also as a developed and advanced civilization. And, you know, so it's kind of this two-way thing where you also, you know, you see yourself as more ahead, you know, more forward, but also the legitimacy you have and the gravitas you have is from an old sense, from a long time, from a long and old existence.
I mean, I get the longevity thing, or the kind of like, we're going to be here till the end of time. We've been here since the beginning of it. But that doesn't mean that you can't fall into a century of chaos and humiliation at the hands of the West. Like, it's just a very elitist thing. Somebody just said that I panic like Scott Ritter. What's going on in this chat today? I do not act like Scott Ritter. What is going on? You guys are out of control. Also seen in Tel Aviv, of course. There was a video of it, but I didn't think we needed to play the video. But very quickly, are they thanking Mr. President? And I also really love this shot. He looks like a baseball.
Why are you wearing a hat at the table?
He looks like a glove. He looks like a baseball mitt. We only have one old tweet from Trump, but there's a slew. Guys, go through their old tweets and just type Iran on their profile.
Oh, about Obama, yeah. So many.
Even Tulsi, we posted one today. She used to sell T-shirts a year ago or back when Soleimani was assassinated, that said, no war with Iran. How poetic. I wish, we should try to order one.
We haven't even talked about Tulsi.
Let's, yeah, you know, I, and with, she's done. I feel like she's committed career Sudoku, I like to say, seppuku. Like, I feel like, you know, you came out and you stuck to your guns or whatever. You stuck to what you knew to be true. In the hearing, you said, you know, I don't think that they're developing nuclear weapons, right? That was what she said. And then Trump comes out and says, well, she's wrong on live TV. Then she says, well, that's not what I said. It's the fake news media. But come to find out, she's not invited to any of the security briefings anymore.
Yeah. So she is done. And I know she's one of those like kind of like online darlings, especially since, you know, the 2016 era. She was really, you know, really big for progressives, really big for anti-war people. And I know a lot of people were excited to have her in this administration. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of her. I didn't think she was going to be like some legendary, you know, cabinet member, but I do almost kind of feel bad for her here. I felt like Trump kind of hung her out to dry.
What did they say? It's her on the outs and someone else is on. Oh, Pete Hegseth. It said Hegseth and Tulsi on the outs at the Trump administration. And this was in a Gray Zone article, which was really good. We read it last night. Ratcliffe and someone else were basic. They were calling them Mossad stenographers, and basically that they were just puppets of the Israeli government. It was really interesting. And that's the CIA. So.
Right. And it's like, if the two that are on the outs are Tulsi and Hegseth, then that is like, that's looking bad for your foreign policy, you know, the state security. It's really, but at the same time, you're going out there and selling these as wins. Meanwhile, you're, you know, Tulsi is not being invited to any meetings or anything like that. And you're contradicting her interviews, you know, within a day. So yeah, it's all bad.
It said Susie Wiles was actually the one keeping them out. And I mean, these people have very colorful backgrounds. Just go look up like who's paid them, who they've worked for. It's just a very interesting story with all of them. I find it really interesting that Tulsi's on her way out. And then you have Laura Loomer, who is actually, well, we could do a whole show on her tweets, but Laura Loomer is actually on a crusade to get Tulsi fired herself. Now, this is coming off of, a week ago, Laura went to the White House and left and 15 people lost their jobs. So she's on a high of getting people fired and she wants Tulsi's neck. So I don't expect, and this doesn't have to do with just Laura, but I don't expect Tulsi to last much longer. I said, as soon as Trump said she was wrong, she should have resigned. I would have put my resignation in right then. And now we're finding out that the intelligence about the nuclear facilities was coming from Mossad. That was revealed, I think, by the New York Times. I'm not 100% sure.
What's I'm just curious. What's Loomer's beef with Tulsi? Is that just...
Oh, well, she hangs out. She hangs out with Jackson Hinkle. And she says... She's not loyal. She's not loyal to Trump. And that since she, you know, she said that thing and then she came out with a tweet that said, basically the media is manipulating what I said. And Laura said, the media did not manipulate what you said. You said what you said, and now you're trying to weasel your way out of it. I think that Tulsi doesn't, remember Tulsi isn't an Assadist, but she's pro-ish was pro-ish Assad and a little bit anti-Zionist. And I think that she's not in the sort of AIPAC Mossad Knesset crowd. And I'm sure that Loomer knows very much who's in that crowd and who's not. And so it's interesting to see Laura go after her so heavily. And now we're hearing that Tulsi is actually on the outs while the sort of Mossad mafia is inside of the security meetings.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. Was it like, is Trump and his team knew that. And so it just kind of surprises me that they would kind of almost facilitate this issue coming about by putting someone like Tulsi in an administration that's otherwise peppered with people that are in that, you know, Israel crowd.
What did Ricky say? She was put in office for the gooners.
Yeah.
So that's why she's there to be like the hot, smart, like tough cookie, right? Yeah. Like the badass bee whatever it is. We did get one while he can't stop posting, but we did get one while we were on here. And let's see what he said. It's not politically correct to use the term regime change. This goes back to where we started with the semantics argument. But if the current Iranian regime is unable to make Iran great again, why wouldn't there be regime change? Mega!
I hadn't even seen this tweet yet, but...
It just came out. Mega!
I need to get a MAGA hat.
MAGA, please.
MAGA,
oh, please.
My, my MAGA, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well.
It's just like, you want to be like, it's such a serious thing. And then your president comes out like a day after the military operation. And he's like, MAGA. And yeah, I see someone to make Israel great again. Yeah, there you go. It all applies.
Oh my God. I think that's a good place to end. Honestly,
yeah, I think so too.
Who knows what's today's going to bring, but you'll see us in the spaces. I don't know if we'll stream this week. You'll see us around. You guys don't forget, please retweet or please share the YouTube link. And I think that's pretty much all I have. You guys have a great week. Mara, any final thoughts? We'll see, wait and see. We still have the big battle. Harry is yelling at us to stop saying MAGA. We're all... And we all love Brian Berletich, JD. My theory of this war is actually very similar to Brian's. I love Brian. I share every post of his I see. I think he's fantastic. And I really like his approach to sort of analysis. He's fantastic. Let's talk about Armenia. Another time.
We still have to wait a little bit because for right now, there's just not a whole lot of news. But
we'll do MAGA, make Anatolia Greco-Armenian again.
I love it.
Okay, guys, have a good week. We'll see you on the spaces. We did a lot of analysis, Dave. Don't complain now. We're burnt out. But thank you, guys. Thank you, Golden Sun. I do eat anchovies, not on my pizza though. And day job. And thank you very much, Max. You guys have a good week. We'll see you around.